Welcome everybody to the Mandated Reporter Commission's virtual public hearing. You should be, as a member of the public, you should be muted right now. You have the option to keep your video on or turn it off. That's completely up to you. This meeting is being recorded, so your participation in this meeting is your consent to being recorded. If you testify, if you're interested in testifying at this meeting, and I expect most of you are, if you're attending today, please message me directly. Chrissy Goldman, you should be able to do that in the chat. It says host Chrissy Goldman, message me directly. You can start messaging me now, and I will take you on a first come, first serve basis for testifying. Your time to testify, and you will have 3 minutes in which to testify, and we'll just be keeping track, and I'll let you know when your time is up. The commission members will be given the opportunity to ask questions if they need to after your testimony. We are offering interpretation services during this meeting for Spanish, Portuguese, and Haitian Creole. You can choose that option at the bottom of your screen where it says interpretations. Or it says language. Mine says English, but you can choose it at the bottom of the screen to change to reflect which language you're interested in using. If you are participating by phone and would like to testify, please text this number. Ready? 781-870-0432. Again, it's 781-870-0432. So text that number if you're interested in testifying and we will put you in the queue. You should be able to see all commission members at the top of your screen. Please make sure you're in gallery view to be able to see all your commission members. And otherwise, I'd like to get started by turning it over to our chair, Maria Masaitis, to give a brief welcome. And then I will start getting us started on testimony. Thank you.
On behalf of the commission, I want to welcome people and thank you for taking the opportunity to provide the commission with testimony. We look forward to hearing your concerns. And what we expect that will happen is we're going to do a second session this coming Saturday at 1 o'clock. And after that, the testimony will be summarized, including the written testimony that we have received, presented to the commission members, whereupon the commission members will deliberate the information that has been provided through the open comment period. And then we will proceed with reaching some recommendations to provide to the legislature by our currently self-imposed deadline of June 30th. So thank you all for coming. We deeply appreciate your taking the opportunity to join us today.
Thank you, Maria. Okay, we're going to start with our first person for testimony. So just give me one moment and I am going to unmute. This will take me a moment. I'm just trying to find somebody here. Yeah. Okay, Rebecca, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you. My name is Rebecca Greening. I'm an attorney, and I represent parents and children in child welfare cases. I'm also a clinical instructor at the Family Law Domestic Violence Clinic at the Legal Services Center of Harvard Law School. I'm testifying today as a member of and on behalf of the Massachusetts Child Welfare Coalition and the Children's Law Support Project. I'm here to raise concern that several of the proposals being considered by the commission would make children in the Commonwealth less safe and expand intrusive policing of families living in poverty, specifically Black and Brown families. These concerning proposals before the commission are expanding the list of mandated reporters, changing the definitions of abuse and neglect, lowering the threshold for reporting, and increasing penalties for failure to report. First, the proposals before the commission will undoubtedly flood the system with reports, the majority of which, statistically speaking, will be suspicions about neglect rather than concerns of abuse. According to DCF's fiscal year 2020 annual report, over 70% of all reports filed were screened out or unsupported by DCF. The proposed changes would substantially increase inappropriate or unsubstantiated reports beyond this already very high number. As the investigative report into the death of Daniel Almond illuminates, DCF has demonstrated an inability to maintain quality responsive decision-making when it comes to the safety of children in the Commonwealth. This is true in the screening process as well, where a surge in reporting based on flawed and biased suspicions will lead to more unnecessary and intrusive investigations. DCF will be quickly overburdened and less able to respond to higher needs families and children. Pennsylvania's expansion of mandated reporting is illustrative in this regard. An audit of impact of the expansion caused the state to have to admit that due to increased workload, supervisors could not provide optimal supervision and had to prioritize answering calls and training new staff over monitoring activities. And a flood of reports resulted in delays in transmitting child abuse reports to investigation agencies. Second, when every child and family facing professional and non-professional is a mandated reporter, an agent of the state surveillance system, families in need will be driven further away from the very services that they need to support their families, based on fear that the state will see their struggles in poverty as inadequate parenting. Research by academic Kelly Fong on the impact of state surveillance in the lives of mothers in poverty highlights that family needs rooted in structural disadvantages are defined as maltreatment, something the proposal before the commission would explicitly do by changing the definition of neglect.
Can we just ask you to just speak a little slowly because the Spanish interpreters are having a hard time catching up with you?
Sure. Social service providers in the community become entities to tiptoe around, seen by parents as agents of the punitive state rather than allies seeking to help families. I ask the commission to seriously look at the insidious and traumatic impact of predominantly Black and Brown families when the threat of their children being taken away looms over access to critical services needed to keep those children safe. In this way, expanding a net of surveillance through broadening mandated reporting does not equal increased safety for children, nor does it strengthen families. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Rebecca. You made it to the 3-minute mark. Okay, I appreciate that. I've got a list ongoing here, so give me one moment and I will unmute our next presenter. Does anyone have any questions for Rebecca in the meantime? Commission members, you can unmute yourselves.
Rebecca, can you submit that to the commission, please, so we'd have your statement on record? Thank you.
I appreciate that, Lisa. I want to remind all participants that we are accepting written testimony. The details of that is on our website. And we have a 3-minute time mark today, but written testimony, you can submit as many pages as you'd like and go into as much detail as you'd like. All right, I'm going to identify our next presenter in one moment. I just want to repeat the phone number. Anyone can text if they want to. If they're participating by phone and would like to testify, which is 781-870-0432. Okay, next we are gonna start with Elizabeth McIntyre and I will unmute you in one moment.
Good afternoon, my name is Elizabeth McIntyre and I am a senior attorney in Greater Boston Legal Services School to Prison Pipeline Intervention Project. I'm also here today with my colleagues from the Children's Law Support Project and the Child Welfare Coalition to address some concerns related to the proposals that the commission is considering. These proposals will exacerbate the racial disproportionality that already permeates our child welfare system by encouraging individuals' implicit biases and by reinforcing racist structures within our child welfare system. DCF's current data shows racial disproportionality at every point in the system. Black and Latinx children are more likely to have their caregivers reported to DCF, more likely to be placed in foster care, and more likely to be separated from their families. Critically, this harm to Black and Latinx children starts with the mandated reporting stage. For every one child reported to DCF, 2.1 Black children and Latinx children are reported.
We need to speak a little slower, please. The interpreters are not able to keep up with your comments.
Sure. When I asked a parent of a potential client during an intake interview whether she was DCF involved, she laughed and told me, "Listen, if you are a mom and you are Black and poor in Boston, you've been filed on. That's how it goes." The proposals that the commission is considering will reinforce this disproportionality, lowering the threshold for reporting from reasonable cause to believe to a suspicion based on mandated reporters' own impressions, asks mandated reporters to rely on their gut instincts. As one of my multiracial child clients told me when he learned that his school counselor had filed a 51A against his mother, "They just don't trust my mom because her skin is darker than mine. Nothing you can do about that." By telling mandated reporters that they must report based simply on their own impressions, the commission encourages these reporters to act based on their own possibly unexamined racial biases. Additionally, eliminating the exceptions for a caregiver's poverty or disability will disproportionately affect caregivers and children of color. Poverty disproportionately affects families of color in Massachusetts, and thus mandating teachers to report a potentially hungry child as neglect without first telling the caregiver.
Can we just please ask you to slow down again? Unfortunately, the interpreters are not able to keep up with your pace.
Mm-hmm. Sure. This will likewise disproportionately harm parents and children of color. No implicit bias training can overcome these harmful structural changes. Although implicit bias training has value in helping individuals understand their own racist beliefs, studies suggest that the meaningful progress in reducing racism within systems requires systemic changes. Here, the commission is proposing the opposite, requiring mandated reporters to report based solely on their own impressions, and even when a child may be struggling because of a parent's disability or poverty, will inevitably and unjustly entrap more Black and Latinx families into painful investigations while failing to keep children safe. Thank you.
Thank you, Elizabeth. I am giving everybody a few extra seconds at the end of their testimony to accommodate the speed in which we're asking people to speak. So I appreciate everybody working hard to stay within the 3 minutes. All right, next I am going to unmute Michael Gregory. So give me one moment.
Good afternoon. My name is Mike Gregory, and I'm the managing attorney at the Trauma and Learning Policy Initiative of Massachusetts Advocates for Children and Harvard Law School. Our mission is to ensure that all students, including those impacted by traumatic experiences, succeed at school. I provide representation in special education to families of students with some form of traumatic experience that is interfacing with the disabilities that qualify them for special education services. Over the past 17 years, I have represented hundreds of families. My clients are parents facing financial hardship, and most of them are parents of color. In addition to being an attorney, I'm also a parent. My daughter just turned 5 years old week before last. As those of you who are parents can appreciate, she's at that age where she likes to explore everything. A few weeks ago, the two of us were at the Roach Brothers in West Roxbury. I stopped the cart in the olive oil section and was studying all the different brands. After a minute or two, I glanced up and my daughter wasn't there. It was a busy day and the store was crowded. I looked up and down the aisle and I couldn't see her. For any parent, you know immediately how I felt. I panicked. My heart started racing, couldn't breathe. in that split second, every bad thing that could have possibly happened to her raced through my mind. Did someone walk away with her? Is she safe? Where is she? All my mind could focus on was wanting to lay eyes on her or hear her voice. I ran down the aisle, walked around the end cap, and of course, there she was taking boxes of cookies off the shelf. I bent down and I hugged her tight to my chest. Dad, why are you hugging me? 5 years old and she's already embarrassed by me in public. At the end of the day, a minor experience, not a big deal, but I never want to feel that feeling of panic again. For many of my clients, that feeling of panic doesn't just happen for a few seconds in the grocery store. They fear that a government agency might take their child away. This is a daily fear for many of them. It becomes a form of trauma in its own right, for the child as well as for the parent. This trauma places a tremendous amount of stress on any family. I have seen firsthand how it can gnaw at the trust between parents and the professionals they work with and depend on. I have witnessed how it can harm the child's ability to trust their teachers and counselors at school and can impede their educational progress. I've seen parents lose their jobs because of repeatedly missing work and because of the reputational costs of being the subject of unfounded mandated reports. And all of this can have a harmful impact on the parent-child relationship as well. Screened out and unsubstantiated mandated reports are the vast majority of reports in the Commonwealth each year. We know this. And my colleagues and I have shared with the commission a chart with story after story of families we know personally where schools have filed inappropriate or unfounded reports. My grave concern is that the proposals being entertained by this commission would make the daily fear so many of these families experience a reality for even more parents and children. My question to each of you on the commission is why? What exactly is the problem these proposals are designed to fix? I have yet to understand what the problem is this commission is trying to solve beyond some inchoate assertion that children in Massachusetts are being harmed and not protected by our current mandated reporter system. Why do we assume this? On what evidence does this presumption rest? And are the proposals being considered precisely targeted to a defined problem? If not, then how can we justify subjecting more parents and more children to the trauma and disruption that unfounded mandated reports already cause?
Mr. Gregory, you are out of-
Are real and they're substantial. Two more sentences.
Yep.
If we don't have a very clearly defined problem backed by evidence, and if we haven't precisely targeted our reforms to that problem, then we cannot justify increasing these harms. I ask each of you to carefully consider this as you continue to deliberate and ultimately vote on these proposals. Thank you so much for your work and for listening.
Okay, thank you very much. I keep forgetting to ask if the commission members have any questions. Please feel free to unmute yourself. Any commission members who have joined the meeting who I have not made co-host, please let me know and I will make you a co-host. You can let me know via the chat. If there are no questions, we'll move on to our next presenter, who is Susan Elson. So give me one moment, Susan, and I will unmute you.
Good afternoon. My name is Susan Elson. I am the Child Welfare Advocate at the Mass Law Reform Institute and a member of the Massachusetts Child Welfare Coalition and the Children's Law Support Project. In closing our testimony on behalf of our panel, I'd like to offer 2 points and also to mention that we are submitting written testimony. First, expanding by statute the definitions of abuse and neglect that are currently in DCF's regulations would have unintended consequences we don't think the commission, DCF, or the public wants to see. The commission's reasoning for eliminating the caretaker requirement and the poverty and disability exclusions from the neglect definition is that a mandated reporter would inappropriately be engaging in investigation if they tried to discern whether the person responsible for the alleged abuse or neglect was a caretaker, or whether what appeared to be neglect was due to poverty or a parent's disability. Instead, the reasoning is reporters should report all concerning circumstances to DCF and let DCF sort it out. The problem, though, is that these statutes would apply not only to mandated reporters, but also to DCF. DCF would not have the authority to sort out, screen out, or not support the non-caretaker cases or the poverty or disability cases reported in, because DCF would be bound by the same statutory definitions that mandated reporters were. This would result in huge additional numbers of cases coming into DCF's caseload, expanding DCF beyond its current mission and violating federal laws protecting parents with disabilities. There is, in fact, a middle ground between improper investigating on the one hand and engaging in no inquiry, but instead immediately reporting to DCF on the other. That is, engaging in critical thinking. And mandated reporters can and are being trained in these critical thinking skills in several states. On Saturday, you'll hear from Benjamin Levy, who developed one such program, iLookout, which we describe in our written testimony. We strongly urge the commission to explore an evidence-based mandated reporter training program in critical thinking skills as an alternative to expanding the statutory definitions of abuse and neglect. Such an approach is also consistent with the Promising Approaches Guide that DCF has endorsed and published on its website. This guide asks mandated reporters to use critical thinking to ensure that reports in the domestic violence context don't do more harm than good. And it is applicable beyond the domestic violence context. You'll hear on Saturday from Roxanne Maskell, who developed the Promising Approaches Guide for DCF. So to conclude, by effective training and an enlightened promising approaches practice for mandated reporters, along with the best use of community resources as described in our testimony, we can strengthen our mandated reporter system to keep kids safer while avoiding the harms to children, families, and DCF of sweeping in many families the child welfare system was not intended to serve. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm going to put you back on mute. You're going to have to hold on for me 1 minute, everyone. I'm just going to try and fix some of the interpretation pieces of this. If any commission members have any questions, please feel free to talk while I troubleshoot some of this. And I'm going to try and fix it before we start with our next presenter.
Attorney Elson, Lisa Hewitt from CPCS, commission member. Could you tell me a little bit more about this iLookout program that you're referring to that we will be hearing some testimony on Friday, Saturday? Oh, I don't know if she can unmute herself.
No, there you go.
Yes, there is more in our testimony. Benjamin Levy developed it and he'll talk more about it. But it's very interesting. It's being offered in Pennsylvania, I believe Maine, and the Head Start programs are using it. And they use a series of videos where mandated reporters work through various scenarios. And it really is geared towards critical thinking skills, both to identify real abuse and neglect when it is taking place so that they're better at actually recognizing abuse and neglect when it is taking place, and also distinguishing between abuse and neglect, between neglect and things that are really more due to poverty, a parent's disability, a simple miscommunication or confusion. So he can tell you more about it, but it really is something I think worth looking into.
Thank you.
We are back online here, so I'm going to move to our next presenter, who is okay. Well, we have you on. Let's see here. Let me assign you. Hold on one moment for me, everybody. That should resolve that, and we will see. And Mr. Wexler, I'm going to unmute you for your 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. Thank you. My name is Richard Wexler. I'm Executive Director of the National Coalition for Child Protection Reform. Full details about NCCPR, as well as links to the studies and data I will mention, are in NCCPR's detailed written testimony submitted to the commission. A link also is available on the NCCPR Child Welfare blog at nccprblog.org. Mandatory reporting is a failure. The system was put in place more than half a century ago with no evidence that it would work. In the decades since, one leading scholar after another who once supported mandatory reporting has turned against it. The research shows that mandatory reporting backfires. Studies show it discourages families from reaching out for help before a crisis. Studies also show that it overloads the system with so many false reports and trivial cases that it leaves caseworkers less time to find the relatively few children in real danger. Mandatory reporting doesn't stop horror stories. It makes those kinds of cases more likely. Among those hurt most by mandatory reporting, battered women and their children. Studies show they are terrified to come forward and report their abuse because anyone they might tell is a mandated reporter, required to call DCF, which can take their children. Abusers know it. If a battered mother threatens to call the police, her abuser can say, "Go ahead. Call the cops. They'll call DCF and DCF will take the kids." If you do not abolish or at least curb mandatory reporting instead of expanding it, then ultimately this commission will be known as a spouse abuser's best friend. Mandated reporting makes all of the state's vulnerable children less safe. That's why it is so disappointing that this commission's deliberations appear to have been limited to choosing between expanding mandatory reporting a little and expanding it a lot. Even worse, as other states are at last starting to come to grips with child welfare's ugly legacy of racial and class bias, this commission is seriously considering making it even easier to confuse poverty with neglect. All this in a state that for decades has torn apart families, especially families of color, at a rate far above the national average. Mandatory reporting is a microcosm of the cycle of failure that has plagued Massachusetts child welfare for more than a century. I observed it since the time I spent as a reporter in Springfield 40 years ago. Here's how the cycle works. A child dies. It turns out the case file at DPW, later DSS, now DCF, had more red flags than a Soviet May Day parade. Someone, an outside group, an inside group, or the obligatory Blue Ribbon Commission issues a scathing report. It's always a scathing report, so we might as well just combine it into a single word. The issue isn't that the scathing report is scathing, that's almost always justified. The issue is that the scathing report misdiagnoses the problem and comes up with the wrong solutions. They always involve making the system more sweeping and more punitive. Then, a few years later, there's another horrifying case, and the whole cycle starts all over again.
Mr. Wexler,
all you get is the same lousy system, only bigger. I will, what, two sentences, please? Massachusetts needs to break the cycle. It could start by abolishing mandatory reporting, because mandatory reporting is a proven failure. Mandatory reporting belongs on the dustbin of child welfare history. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, I just want to remind anyone who is on the phone that you can text 781-870-0432 if you would like to provide testimony. I will move us to our next.
See, I have a quick question.
Sure. Go right ahead.
Thank you. Mr. Wexler, you mentioned that other states are starting to come to grip with some of the racially disproportionate impacts or something along those lines. If you could provide to the commission any information about those other states and how they're responding, that would be helpful. Thank you.
Excellent, thank you, Angela. And I'll move us to our next speaker. There you are, you're unmuted, go right ahead.
Thank you, my name is Dr. Michal Raz. I am a practicing physician. I have a PhD in history, a master's in health policy research, and I hold the Phelps Chair in Public Policy and Health at the University of Rochester. I do not represent any organization. Today, I'm here as a concerned citizen. I have published extensively on child abuse policymaking, including an academic book on—
Please slow down any testimony. The interpreters can keep up.
I can try, sure. I've published extensively on child abuse policymaking, including on the history of mandated reporting, with a book out in November 2020, academic book, and I've specifically looked at the effects of expanded mandatory reporting in Pennsylvania. I'm here today to voice my strong concerns about the changes to mandatory reporting being considered by this commission. I believe it will make the children and families of Massachusetts less safe while damaging the fabric of our communities. My main concerns are the proposed changes vastly expand the definitions of mandated reporters to situations that require reporting and expand penalties for non-reporting. Taken together, these policies have the potential to vastly increase the numbers of reports made and may have a chilling effect on parents and communities seeking support and services. While it might seem logical that increasing mandatory reporting would be helpful, we have no evidence it keeps children safer, and it comes at a significant cost. More reporting doesn't mean more accurate reporting. It doesn't mean safer children. All it means is the creation of more reports. Increased reporting leads to more reports of
Can you slow down a little bit, please?
I can try. Sorry,
I'm a quick speaker. No, I know, it's hard.
I will submit also written testimony. Increased reporting means more reports of non-abuse situations, which means essentially more reports of poverty. More reporting actually serves to divert resources and attention away from situations where abuse might be taking place, and conversely, it might make kids less safe. I'm going to quickly jump over to the Pennsylvania experience and just give some numbers as to what happened after Pennsylvania expanded mandatory reporting with 24 pieces of legislation as a reaction to a well-known horrifying case of non-reporting. In 2014, before it was enacted, about 29,000 reports were made. In 2015, the following year, the number was over 42,000. And in 2018, it was 44,000. All these increasing reports with a decrease in substantiation, meaning that most of the reports are not substantiated, and we are substantiating fewer reports, possibly because we don't have the resources to sift through all the reports that are coming in. We have a differential system in Pennsylvania in which the non-abuse reports go to General Protective Services. There, the number quadrupled from 47,000 to almost 177 reports. Most of these reports deal primarily with parental drug abuse, parental homelessness, truancy, or educational neglect. These are all challenges, but these are not maltreatment situations. They require services. They don't require investigations. Overall, the hotline received 190,000 reports in 2018, a huge number of reports. The vast majority are not dealing with maltreatment. The implementation was really hard. Once they started, the state auditor, I'm sorry, do not, I.
Sorry, we can't see, Gemma, we can't see your note. Can you pull it back a little bit just so we can see it on the screen? Do not read. Hold on, I can't unmute. Okay, you went on mute again, Gemma, but I understand what you're saying. She's saying if you read your testimony, You're going to speed through it. So just be aware of that and try and keep it slow. You are out of time, so I'll let you do a couple of sentences to wrap up.
Okay. I would like to make a few more points quickly that when you have so many reports to Childline, so many will go unanswered. In 2015, unanswered calls went from 6,000 to 42,000. So you're going to have an inundation of reports that the hotline will not be able to sort through. They will be unanswered, they will be dropped, and they will be unsupervised. In 2014, before the expansion, Pennsylvania spent $46.5 million on investigations. In 2018, after the expansion, Pennsylvania spent $301.4 million. The overall child welfare funding went from $1.42 billion to $1.838 billion. All the money, or almost all the money, the increase in expenditures was driven by investigations. The investigation did not find more abused kids, but rather kids who were suffering from poverty, educational neglect. Any money is worth it to keep kids safe. But it's notable that this money is being spent on investigation and not on service. In Pennsylvania, the number of...
All right, you've been cut off. Let's see here. We can give you more time at the end.
Could she provide her testimony?
Yes, yes. Can you provide any additional testimony via written testimony? And anyone is encouraged to do that. We have details on the Mandated Reporter website about how to do that. And we are accepting written testimony until April 21st. So there's still time to get in there. I'm going to move to our next presenter unless anyone has any
questions. Lisa again, I don't have a question, but I just wanted to explain to everyone here the reason we're asking. I mean, we put a lot of thought into making sure that there were interpreters present, and not only that they were, and we have separate rooms for people so that they can hear the interpretation, because we thought it was vitally important to be able to have those who care to come to this hearing today to understand what's going on. So I'm sorry if we're being irritating, asking you to slow down. And I know we all talk fast, but if you really try to give that some thought, it would be great. Thank you.
Thank you, Lisa. I appreciate that. And I will note that the commission members will be receiving any written testimony in full. The OCA will be summarizing that testimony, but they'll also receive the full testimony. So any details, links, data that can be included in those will be provided to the commission members for their review. I'm next gonna unmute Maya. You're next. I'm going to, you are.
Yeah. Hi everyone, my name's Maya Milich. I'm a social worker, LICSW in Boston. This testimony is submitted on behalf of Boston Liberation Health, BLH, a group for healthcare workers and users committed to addressing the structural and institutional flaws in our healthcare system and to fighting for and creating alternative forms of social organization and healthcare. BLH is submitting testimony to strongly oppose—
Maya, I'm sorry, it's way too fast for the translators.
All right, yeah, please feel free to give me a reminder. I tend to be a fast talker, but I will try my best to slow down. BLH is submitting testimony to strongly oppose the changes being proposed by the Mandated Reporter Commission. Even without the implementation of these proposed changes, mandated reporting is already fraught with racism and classism. As examples, from 2000 to 2011, 1 in 7 Black children and 1 in 9 American Indian children were removed from their homes, compared to 1 in 17 white children. The majority of reports of neglect are a result of poverty, and over 50% of Black children have been the subject of a child maltreatment investigation. Changing regulations to include that mandated reporters also report on simply suspicions of abuse and or neglect would only further the number of reports made against poor and working class people of color and families. By encouraging mandated reporters to rely more on their gut instincts of suspicion that are frequently influenced by racist and classist bias.
So we need to ask you to slow down even a little bit more, if possible. Sure. Thank you.
Increasing fines and penalties for mandated reporters who do not report would again only further encourage providers to rely on these internalized biases and increased reports against poor and working class POC families. In addition, these changes would lead to understandable further distrust of service providers. Changing the definition of neglect to no longer exclude exceptions for challenges due to poverty and or disability would also only further enhance the punishment and criminalization of individuals and families living in poverty and or with a disability, as opposed to providing adequate resources so that the child's and family's needs are met. All of these changes would increase the racism, classism, and ableism already embedded in the mandated reporting system. It is also relevant and important to consider the larger picture of racial and overlapping racial justice and overlapping considerations about funding. I'll try to skip a little bit to get this all in, but there has been increased public critical discussion happening about other oppressive systems of institutionalized racism, from the criminal legal system to the immigration system, including criticism around the vast amounts of funding poured into policing and prisons, and critical analysis around policing and mass incarceration's roots in slavery and slave patrols. In comparison, little attention has been paid to mandated reporting and family regulation systems, such as to how more money is spent on the child welfare family regulation system than on WIC, the Children's Health Insurance Program, or SNAP, or to how the racism embedded in our current systems of family monitoring is not incidental and overlaps with the history of family surveillance, control, and separation in this country, from the separation of families during the time of slavery to the removal of about 2/3 of American Indian children from their families by the 1970s.
So just a couple sentences to wrap up.
Okay. While it is relatively widely known that the U.S. has the largest rate of incarceration, it is less widely known that the U.S. has the greatest number of children who have forcibly been made orphans. In the same way that there is a movement and pressure to move funding and resources away from policing and prisons and into community-based efforts to support health and safety, we also need to be thinking about ways to decrease the funding and power of family regulation systems and redirect funds and efforts into resources that support children and families directly, as opposed to efforts that further criminalize and control primarily poor POC families. The changes proposed by the Mandated Reporter Commission would enhance racism, classism, and further the control, criminalization, and separation of poor families of color, and would potentially lead to additional funding for such efforts because of the increase in reports that would happen. For these reasons, Boston Liberation Health is very strongly opposing these changes. Thank you.
Does anyone have any questions based on that past testimony? If not, I am going to unmute Jim Tapp. You are not unmuted yet. You have to accept my request to unmute you. Should be popping up on your screen as a little pop-up. There you are. No? Yep, there you are.
Okay. Thank you very much. I'm Jim Taff. I have practiced in the juvenile court for many years. I'm here only for myself, and I imagine probably for many of my colleagues who are here or aren't here. But in any event, I'm throwing out most of my remarks because other witnesses have gone over most of it and very well. And I'm going to tell you about a case that myself and some colleagues tried earlier this year, in which we felt the overriding theme was implicit bias. And really, if I could illustrate how implicit bias just even cropped up in a case that had to be tried, I think it applies to everything else, reporting, screening, every aspect of child protection. In this case, relatives, the parents were out of the picture, relatives wanted to retain custody of a young child with some special needs. The department felt they weren't up to it, couldn't understand these complex issues. The child had to be adopted out. We had about 12 days of trial, and we had a parade of providers, various medical and other kinds of professionals who had been in contact with this family and this child. And really what it was all about was, are these relatives who want this child up to it? Can they ensure that a child with special needs gets the services he needs? Can they understand? Are they determined enough? And so on. We had a parade of these witnesses, and also a lot of documents. There was a lot of documentary evidence, and a lot of it consisted of opinion, and in my view, speculation, argument, and so on, that the relatives did not have the capacity to do this. These were a black immigrant family, a working class family. The child had the alternative prospect of going with a prosperous white family that had all the language for this kind of treatment that the child would need. Just to make a long story short, fortunately, we were able to prevail, and the judge essentially rejected the department's theory. However, this was 12 days of listening about how the relatives were not intelligent enough, didn't have the intellectual capacity, were not willing to make the sacrifices, were unable to understand this material, did not have advocacy skills, and just could not risk staking this child's future with these people. I find that kind of implicit bias, I think that the judge saw it that way, pervades the system at every stage. And
you are out of time, so I'm just gonna ask you to wrap it up with a couple of sentences.
But there is also a cost to expanding the net in this way, in that it is really a form of terror, or experienced as terror, by the large parts of the population that would be brought into the net because of bias for cases that lack merit. And that goes in the opposite direction of everything that happened and started to happen last summer. And I don't think that the commission should go forward with these recommendations.
Thank you very much, appreciate it. Does anyone have any questions based on that testimony? Any commission members have questions? Please feel free to unmute yourselves. I do want to remind all participants that if you would like to testify at this hearing, you can message me directly via the chat box. So you'll find me as host, Chrissy Goldman. If you are interested in testifying and you are on the phone, you can text to 781-870-0432. Again, 781-870-0432. And I'm going to move us on to our next presenter. Just give me one quick moment. Okay, you are on and you have 3 minutes.
Excellent. My name is Hema Sarang-Sabinski. I'm the policy director of Jane Doe Inc., the Massachusetts Coalition Against Sexual and Domestic Violence. Our 59 member programs provide trauma-informed, community-based, holistic models of safety and support for all survivors and their children in the Commonwealth. We understand that harm can be both interpersonal as well as systemic, and we are deeply concerned by the proposals to dramatically expand mandatory reporting in the Commonwealth. We believe these proposals will target communities of color
and have an enormous chilling effect on survivors of sexual and domestic violence and their children, especially those who face additional oppression because of their race, gender identity, disability, or poverty. We have heard from many JDI members. We want to make it clear that we do not believe the exemptions proposed for sexual and domestic violence advocates will even begin to address the concerns raised here today. Survivors come into contact with mandatory reporters in so many ways. We are at an inflection point in our movement to end sexual and domestic violence, one where we have to humbly acknowledge the tensions between the desire for safety for victims and the stark realities that our current systemic responses fall short on safety and in fact can dramatically increase harm to survivors and communities of color. In 2021, we must collectively acknowledge that mandatory reporting is a form of policing. It is more than reasonable and in fact necessary to demand that this immense power granted to mandatory reporters be wielded with great care. And yet this commission seeks to implement recommendations that will urge powerful and potentially dangerous actions based on a hunch. We are not here to debate the necessity of a child welfare system. As advocates for survivors of sexual and domestic violence, we understand the realities that some system interventions truly save lives while others cause harm. This is the middle place from which we move and advocate for system change that centers the needs of all survivors. What we are certain about is this: we know that how and when those interventions occur can make or break the likelihood that a survivor will ever reach out for help again. It is also indisputable that DCF interventions increase trauma for children and their families, even when those interventions are warranted. The dramatic broadening of who can report and when a report must be made is negligent in its disregard of the power, the authority, and impact of a report. Sexual and domestic violence thrives in isolation and silence. Our work must do more to foster connection and reduce barriers. These proposals are a recipe for unwarranted, harmful, traumatic interventions that will further isolate those in our communities most in need of support and connection. We ask the commission to reassess the directions of its proposals. The child welfare system, like many of the systems we are questioning, such as in our policing and criminal justice systems, need more safeguards. Thank you.
Thank you, I appreciate
Sorry, that. Video muted for half of that by accident.
No problem at all, and your feed was perfect. I will note I am providing everybody a couple extra seconds to account for the speed, so I appreciate that. All right, does anyone have any questions based on that testimony?
But this is Lisa Hewitt, once again from CPCS. I'm wondering, you know, with your context of serving the constituency and the community that you serve, have you seen it done better, or do you know from perhaps your national coalitions if there's a better way? And you don't necessarily have to go into great depth here, but is mandated reporter being reformed anywhere in the country that you think serves the victim's community?
That's a great question, and we'll certainly address that in our written testimony, which we'll submit. We're part of a Promising Futures working group nationally that has been meeting on these topics. You know, I think many of our members have talked about the approaches that they use that actually, you know, increase that kind of thoughtful conversation, discretion, inquiry prior to making a report as really sort of the model that programs that do engage in mandatory reporting on occasion do implement. And I think that's really where our concerns stem from. And we'd be happy to weigh in on some of the models we have seen lifted up.
I think any information like that you could share with the commission would be hugely important to our deliberations. Thank you.
Great, thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. All right. point, we will move on to our next presenter, unless anyone else had any additional questions. No, then I am moving on to Kelly Fong. I just sent you a request to unmute yourself.
Hey. Thank you. Let me start by thanking the Commission for all of its work in recent months to review the state's mandatory reporting statutes. So my name is Kelly Fong. I'm currently an assistant professor of sociology at Georgia Tech, although I'm here in my personal capacity. I hold a PhD in sociology and social policy from Harvard. I'm offering my comments today based on over a decade of experience in child welfare research and advocacy. I've conducted extensive qualitative and quantitative research on the front end of the child welfare system. So let me start by saying that I absolutely share the Commission's goal of protecting children and preventing child abuse and neglect. Today, I want to share what some of my research suggests about the likely unintended consequences for child and family well-being of some of the Commission's proposals. In particular, several of these proposals are likely to increase reports from mandated reporters. These increased reports will not necessarily advance the Commission's goal of protecting children from harm. As my colleague Michal Raz stated, our goal should not be to create reports for the sake of creating reports, but rather to ensure children's safety. My research suggests that expanding reporting in the ways proposed by the Commission may actually make children less safe by distancing them from needed services and resources. So you may hear from a number of parents today and Saturday how their DCF reports strained relationships with the very systems that we would hope would support them. When you hear these experiences, know that they're not anomalies. So I interviewed scores of mothers in Rhode Island and Connecticut who were reported to DCF by mandated reporters. Nearly 60% of them described negative consequences for their relationships with these reporters after the report. Importantly, these reports were typically unsubstantiated, so DCF didn't identify any safety concerns. Even still, the reports have a chilling effect. So mothers in my research mentioned switching doctors, canceling social service programs like home visiting services, changing daycares and schools after these providers called DCF. They talked about thinking twice next time about doing things like going to the hospital or calling the police when experiencing domestic violence. The trust they'd been building with providers shattered. After providers reported them, mothers learned not to disclose things like homelessness or mental health needs with mandated reporters. Reports can thus cut off critical sources of support for children. Expanding DCF's reach in the ways proposed by the Commission will funnel even more situations of poverty to the child welfare system, further impeding the positive relationships with schools, healthcare providers, and other social service systems that we know are essential to promoting child well-being. Thank you so much for your consideration.
Thank you very much. Do we have any questions from the Commission based on what Ms. Fong has said? Okay. One moment here. All right, you're on for 3 minutes.
Yes, good afternoon. I'm Dave Yost from the great city of Holyoke. You've got my business name on there. I'm speaking from the perspective of a grandparent who's had a granddaughter and also a grandson, a sibling removed. To briefly summarize, our granddaughter was born actually 2 years ago, last month. There were a lot of complications at birth. The medical facility didn't follow proper procedures. She almost died at birth. She was resuscitated, thankfully. The medical facility just did a cursory exam of her for injuries. They found some broken bones, but she was released. A few weeks after the birth, she was home for about 3 months. Our daughter took her in because she thought she was ill. At that point, the medical facility did a thorough examination, found all kinds of internal injuries, cerebral injuries, and so forth. And she was immediately removed. And we've only had infrequent contact with her since then, and also our grandson, who's also removed. And we've never had any chance to refute the accusations, never had any sort of hearing. You know, the court, even before the COVID started, the court didn't let us in. And obviously now it's become much worse. So, and then, speaking directly to the mandated reporting, it's definitely going in the wrong direction to increase it. A lot of things have been touched on already, the cultural and economic bias in it. I think maybe it was Mr. Wexler mentioned it. It's the needle in the haystack. We have a few egregious cases, but when we're going after every little thing, you know, we're missing those very egregious ones that we should be focusing on. And I think that we should be, our resources would be so much better directed at helping families rather than policing them. And just to make an analogy, you know, my own tax business, when people come in, they can trust me. They know I'm going to help them get into compliance with their taxes by not going to running to the authorities to turn them in. That trust between, in any field, between the service provider and the professional is very important. This mandatory reporting goes very much against that. So in closing, I'm saying I'm very encouraged from what I've been hearing, and I hope that the commission will take it to heart. Thank you.
Thank you.